This is The Pulse, stories about the people and places at the heart of health and science. I'm Mike and Scott. This story is from our episode, Do Less Harm. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts. Over the past couple of decades, harm reduction advocates in the U.S. have pushed to decriminalize sex work, also referred to as prostitution. Those in support say this line of work is always going to exist, and being able to do this without fearing legal repercussions makes things safer. It allows people to be choosier about their clients, to protect themselves against violence. But some people say the U.S. took a step in the other direction with legislation that was passed in 2018. It was intended to stop sex trafficking, but may have had some unintended consequences. Liz Tung has more.
Hey.
Hi. Oh, I'm so glad I got the right apartment.
Yeah.
I meet Danielle Blunt, who just goes by Blunt, and her friend Ariel Wolf at an eerie Brooklyn apartment near Prospect Park. Blunt offers me a quick tour.
So we're in my office, which is a combination of a traditional office and my kink play space, or my dungeon, if you will.
This is where Blunt, who's a sex worker and professional dominatrix, meets with a lot of her clients. Dungeon is what people in the BDSM community, who are into things like spanking, bondage, and submission, call their dedicated play spaces. I know it's just a term, but I still can't get over how distinctly non-dungeon-y this apartment is.
It's a very, like, beautiful, airy space.
Thank you. Yeah, I like to work in natural light. It feels important to me that people look at the thing that they're doing.
It's interesting because, like, when I think dungeon, I think most of us, we think, like, dark, like, underground place. But this, I mean, this could be, like, a IKEA showroom.
But in between the macrame plant hangers and tasteful Nordic furniture are some unmistakable tools of the trade.
This is called a hashira. It's a Japanese bondage post, which I will string people up to. And
Blunt also shows me her whip without any warning. Brace your ears.
Why'd you run away? Yeah.
Wait, can you do that again without me screaming?
Oh, you don't think you screaming was an important part of the...
Blunt refers to what she does as sex work. It's a term that was coined in the 1970s to try and get away from the stigma associated with prostitution. Prostitution meant criminality, exploitation, immorality. It was an evil that needed to be abolished. Sex work, on the other hand, was conceived as a form of labor that deserves its own rights and protections. Some people even find it empowering. Here's Blunt's friend, Ariel Wolf. She works as an exotic dancer.
I worked waiting tables for a lot of my early 20s, and honestly, I felt more exploited and degraded in that situation than I ever did dancing.
She also makes more money for far less work. These days, Ariel says she can even afford out-of-network mental health care, something that would have been impossible in her waitressing days.
Just having that financial agency was empowering. So for me, it was a form of autonomy that was, you know, really important. And yeah, I preferred it to waiting tables.
Of course, not all sex work is empowering. It can be exploitative and risky, even downright dangerous. But around the 1990s, sex work started getting a tiny bit safer, thanks to a little something called Craigslist Personals. Craigslist, of course, is the free listings website where people can advertise anything from sublets to secondhand furniture. And in 2002, they added a dedicated erotic services section where sex workers could connect with clients. That was quickly followed by another online behemoth, Backpage.com, along with several straight-up directories of sex workers, like City Vibe and Night Shift. Advocates say this shift online has been good for sex worker safety. In fact, in a study last year, researchers from Baylor University found that Craigslist's erotic services section led to a drop in the female homicide rate of up to 17.6%. That's not including crimes in which victims knew their killers. The authors of the study say this was a direct result of the shift online. It gave sex workers a chance to screen out violent clients and drum up their own business, as opposed to relying on pimps, who are often exploitative. On a bigger level, it also helped empower sex workers to connect with one another, articulate their shared interests and problems, and perhaps most importantly, share lists of dangerous clients. But sex workers weren't the only ones capitalizing on websites like Backpage. Also taking advantage, sex traffickers. For years, openly posted ads for women and children being held against their will. One of those children was Melanie Thompson.
I was 12 years old when I was kidnapped on my way home from a movie theater in the sixth grade. And the person who kidnapped me locked me in a house, in an abandoned house in a closet, and started selling me on the street initially in prostitution. And gradually we had advanced, for lack of a better word, from the street to underground strip clubs to Backpage.com, essentially.
Melanie doesn't like the term sex work. In fact, she corrects me when I say it.
So I don't use the term sex work because I like to say that sex work is neither. Sex is not work and work is not sex. And although I recognize that there is a population of people who self-identify as sex workers, it's really a term that's used to mask the inherent harms that comes with prostitution.
Because to her, this isn't some empowering choice. It's a life of exploitation, suffering, and trauma. At an age most girls are hanging out with their friends or going to school dances, Melanie remembers sitting next to her exploiter as he typed up ads to post about her on Backpage.
The ads, it would start with whatever name I was given for the day. It would describe my measurements, so my bust size, my hip size. It would describe my race, and sometimes, because I'm mixed race, so we decided to either stick with one of my races, two of my races, both of them.
Melanie doesn't buy the argument that websites like Backpage make sex work safer. In fact, she says some of her most dangerous jobs came from Backpage.
When I was street walking, it was dangerous, don't get it twisted, but at least I could see the face of somebody from the car. On Backpage, you have to either wait in a hotel room, wait in your apartment, wherever you're engaging in prostitution from, and then wait till the person pops up and see what they look like and see what they're about. Or if you're doing an out call, go to this person's house and hope for the best. And what I found is that because Backpage made it so easy for sex buyers to continue this behavior repeatedly, many of the sex buyers I've encountered on this website were repeat offenders. And many of them have told me out of their own mouths that this was a hobby for them, that they love to quote unquote go shopping.
In fact, Backpage has been so instrumental in sex trafficking that it's faced multiple lawsuits from young women like Melanie. Lawsuits with powerful backers, including former California Attorney General Kamala Harris. But until recently, those lawsuits failed. That's because Backpage and other websites were protected by one of the most important pieces of internet legislation in existence, Section 230. It's part of the 1996 Communications Decency Act. It helps shield web publishers from being legally liable for what users post on their websites. It's basically the free speech protection that's allowed sites like Twitter and Reddit and YouTube to flourish. But a couple years ago, that protection was upended with a passage of a pair of laws called SESTA-FOSTA.
Today we bring, Mr. Speaker, H.R. 1865.
Or some people call it FOSTA-SESTA. SESTA stands for Stop Enabling Sex Traffickers Act, and FOSTA is short for Allow States and Victims to Fight Online Sex Trafficking Act.
The sad truth is that sex trafficking is a crime as old as the nation itself. Over the past few years, Congress has routinely taken bipartisan action to fight it. Yet sex trafficking seems to continue unabated. This is largely because the methods of recruitment and sale of sex trafficking victims have evolved with technology.
SESTA-FOSTA took away the safe harbor protection from any online speech that enables prostitution, including voluntary sex work. The laws passed with strong bipartisan support in 2018, and the effect was immediate.
Has led to the shutdown of the Craigslist personal section.
The adult section with those links for escorts, body rubs, strippers, strip clubs, each of them now has what you see on your screen now, that red censored word on the
back. Page shut down, as did Craigslist personals and a bunch of other sites, sending droves of sex workers back to the streets. In the years since, advocacy groups have reported a spike in the number of missing and dead sex workers across the country. The thing was, nobody knew for sure what was happening, because no one was studying it. Except, as it turns out, for a pair of 20-something sex workers in New York who decided to take on the project themselves. Re-enter Blunt and Ariel.
I think the main thing we really wanted to find out was just exactly how this was affecting people's financial security, how it was affecting their mental health, and just what experiences individuals were having.
Ariel and Blunt decided to design a study by sex workers for sex workers. So they created a survey that contained 80 questions, some multiple choice, some open-ended, to give respondents a chance to explain their answers.
Barriers to other forms of labor was one of the sections that we were asking people about. So if they had any difficulty finding other jobs, we asked about mental health diagnoses.
Yeah, we really wanted to create a portrait of exactly who was doing this work and why it was so important that they have access to these spaces and how it was affecting them.
They distributed the surveys online and got 110 of them back. After analyzing them, they concluded several impacts, mostly expected. Yes, Sesta Fosta was decreasing financial stability by limiting the ability to advertise. Yes, it was pushing sex workers from online into the streets, and sometimes into the arms of pimps. And yes, all of the above was increasing sex workers' exposure to violence. But Blunt says they also had some unexpected findings.
Well, we found that 50% of our sample group had barriers to other forms of labor, and that the most common barriers were mental health diagnosis, they were chronic illness and disability.
For years, studies have connected sex work with poor health. But researchers have always assumed that the health problems, especially issues with mental health or trauma, stem from the sex work itself. What Blunt and Ariel's survey was telling them was that maybe it was the other way around.
What we found by asking more open-ended questions was that a lot of people were doing sex work because they had this diagnosis previously and their mental health problems were making it difficult for them to hold a 9-to-5 job and that they needed flexibility to work around these issues.
So why would people with disabilities or mental health issues be drawn to sex work? To find out, I talked with Lola. That's not her real name, by the way. She works in healthcare and says she's not out to her job about doing sex work on the side. Anyway, Lola has an autoimmune disease that attacks her muscles. It started when she was in college, but went undiagnosed for years.
The main symptoms are like muscle weakness and muscle pain. And so things that involved standing for a long time, things that involve, lifting things that typically for like a normal quote-unquote person probably wouldn't be such a big deal, but for me can get very fatiguing and very debilitating very quickly.
Throughout college, Lola worked service industry jobs to support herself and pay tuition. But for the most part, those jobs require a lot of standing and movement, which would inevitably be Lola's undoing.
So I remember once I was working in the service industry as a waitress, and I remember just standing behind the counter and holding plates and trying to, carry a bunch of things. And just every part of my body felt like it was just screaming at me.
In her mid-20s, Lola started volunteering with an activist group that focused on sex work issues. As she got to know more and more sex workers, Lola started thinking, hey, I could do this. So she posted a profile on a website, and her sex work career was off and running. Lola says she finds sex work empowering. She enjoys it, and it gives her confidence. It also gave her the chance to work a job that was both flexible enough and well-paid enough to accommodate her illness.
As a person who has a lot of medical bills, like, I don't have to worry about going to the doctor and not being able to pay my copay. I can do that whenever I want to, and being able to do other alternative therapies that make my body feel better, like massage or acupuncture, all of that stuff has been so much easier because I have an income that can support it.
Because of that, Lola's been able to do something she never would have thought she could. She's currently working on 2 advanced degrees and is able to do that without having to worry about money.
I don't have to worry about choosing between, paying for my medical bills and paying for my tuition.
All of that stress and more came flooding back with the passage of Sesta Fosta. It got harder to find new clients, which meant work started drying up. And then there was a more immediate concern, getting charged with a crime.
It was also just really, really scary and stressful because we didn't know what was going to happen. We were hearing about raids that were happening in various places. And for those of us that were out, I think, you felt super, super vulnerable.
Lola says having a disability ups the stakes for a lot of sex workers.
This is your number one form of income, and this is your number one occupation. And it is that because it is flexible, it suits your needs.
Blunt and Ariel's survey has found that overall, SESTA-FOSTA has had a harmful impact on the health of sex workers who are disabled.
Of our online respondents with chronic illness, 26% reported an increase in the exacerbation of their symptoms. So a lot of them have had to return to work that doesn't cater to their disability or it doesn't allow them to take time off.
I ran this argument by Melanie, the advocate who was trafficked as a child, but she wasn't buying it.
Majority, over 98% of individuals who engage in prostitution are vulnerable people already. I think it's highly unfortunate if there's somebody who is disabled, and I do recognize that that puts a strain on their employment opportunities. However, there are so many other ways to work from home that don't involve the constant reusing and repurchasing of your body.
What the argument over SESTA-FOSTA gets to is a bigger conflict about prostitution or sex work. Everyone agrees that it can be harmful. The question is, do we try and get rid of it completely, abolition, supported by laws like SESTA-FOSTA, or do we recognize that it will never truly go away and try to make it as safe as possible? Blunt, Ariel, and Lola all told me they're in favor of decriminalization, a movement that's picked up ever more steam thanks in part to SESTA-FOSTA, which a coalition of sex worker rights and online free speech advocates are working to challenge in the courts. As for Melanie, she's in favor of a model that maintains penalties for sex buyers and traffickers, but decriminalizes the sex workers themselves. But she says that kind of solution is a long ways away.
I definitely agree that FOSTA SESTA is not the end all be all, and honestly, it was never intended to be, and I think it was a necessary step.
In fact, earlier this year, it gave Melanie the chance to file her own long-awaited lawsuit against Backpage, through which she hopes to get some kind of justice for what she went through.
Once this happens, you can take the person out of prostitution, but you can never take prostitution out of that person. That trauma that comes with it, all of those harms, that's something that me and every other survivor I've ever met will never forget. And we have to live with that every day.
That story was reported by Liz Tung.